Ready to start?
Mm-hmm.
In 5, 4, 3. Welcome to the Weird Science Podcast. I'm Justin.
I'm Shane.
And you are listening to a podcast where comedians explore everything weird about science. Today, the fourth dimension.
Ooh, all right. I love that band.
Yeah, it's a good, they're a good cover band. It is a spinoff from our recent coverage of the congressional UAP hearings. So if you have not heard those episodes, we covered it extensively in a couple episodes. So check them out. Mm-hmm. Very groundbreaking stuff. We posted on our socials this great quote from an editorial from The Hill. I'm becoming a real fan of The Hill, by the way.
I don't know much about them, but they do seem to be reporting stuff.
The Hill is a nonpartisan... You know, like when you look at Common Sense Media, which breaks down everybody's leanings.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They're like right in the middle. They report on what is happening.
Okay.
But they do have an editorial group, you know, which is opinions more than news. But the article was spot on.
Yeah, it was great. It was it's either a cover up or it's real. Not a cover up. It's either real or it's a psyop.
Either the government has been denying that we have UFOs for decades, or they've been actively participating in a disinformation campaign to make us think that we do.
Yeah, and both
either
are crazy.
Either one's not good.
Yeah,
but in the congressional hearings, David Grush, if you haven't heard those, David Grush is a former intelligence officer, whistleblower, and he indicated to Congress repeatedly that they were not alien intelligence. It was not extraterrestrial intelligence.
Right.
He insisted that it was non-human intelligence.
Yes, NHIs.
And when asked about it, he wanted to leave open the possibility that there was dimensional travel.
Sure.
And so let's hear the clip of him explaining this.
You have mentioned that there's interdimensional potential. Could you expound on that? And then in terms of multidimensionality, that kind of thing. The framework that I'm familiar with, for example, is something called the holographic principle. It derives itself from general relativity and quantum mechanics. And that is, if you want to imagine 3D objects such as yourself casting a shadow onto a 2D surface, that's the holographic principle. So you can be projected, quasi-projected from higher dimensional space to lower dimensional. It's a scientific trope that you can actually cross, literally, as far as I understand, but there's probably guys with PhDs that we could probably argue about.
That. Crazy that music was playing during the hearing. that's crazy.
You bring background, you bring walk-up music to a congressional hearing, you're the man.
Hell yeah.
So you heard the general gist of the holographic principle from David Grush. Admittedly, if you're not a quantum physicist or mathematician, this stuff's really hard to understand. I'm saying that up top.
Yeah, yeah, it can be, for sure.
For sure. So if you're not one of those people, I don't know, drink a beer, smoke a bowl, it helps me.
Yeah,
But the holographic principle arose in the early 90s with a physicist named Gerard Tehuft.
Oh, Tehuft, Tehuft.
I don't know what the apostrophe T is in a name.
Otherwise, it would just be Thoft.
Thoft. This is how Americans ended up with such weird names. You know, if you immigrated to America and the immigration officer could not pronounce your name, they literally just shortened it.
Yeah, or they made it Smith.
Smith. What do you do? I'm a blacksmith. You're Smith, right?
That's what.
Yeah, it's. But in any case, what this theory is that the Planck length, by the way, is the length of dimension where regular Einstein physics start to not make sense. Quantum physics start to make more
sense. When things get real time, it starts to get real weird.
They begin to dominate. The theories of quantum mechanics begin to dominate classical gravitational theory. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very small.
Yeah.
And on that length can hold one bit of information. Mm-hmm. And all that information is contained by the surface area of the object, not its volume. Now, what does that mean practically? It means that even if you are a three-dimensional object trapped in a two-dimensional space, right?
Okay.
Here's how it makes sense to me, right? In the 90s, if you went to the mall, which
I did quite a bit.
The mall, yeah. I know the mall is a sad place.
yeah.
Going to the mall today, but in the 90s, it was essentially like our social media.
Yeah, it was great. Like you see people out.
Yeah, it's where you went to be seen. You know?
It was a city square.
Yeah, that's right. It was, and we don't need that anymore because we have social media. But that's what you did. And one of the things in the mall, it was never a store. It was always a kiosk. Mm. And the kiosk's most interesting part of the mall, right? The brick and the places on the sides were national chains.
Yeah.
The center of the mall were grifters.
Yeah, there's a bunch of wild cards. It was like, it's like the fair came to town right. at some stage, and they're like, check this like, out.
Yeah, but it was my favorite part of the mall. Absolutely. And there was a kiosk there that sold these images. And it always looked like something kind of weird. Sometimes it'd be a picture, like a sailboat.
Well, talking about the magic eyes?
Yeah, magic eyes.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the magic eye was this poster. And what you would do is you would stare at it. And if you stared at it long enough till your eyes got kind of crossed and blurry, you would see a three-dimensional object, mm-hmm. right? So you would stare at it for a while. Some people could never do it.
Yeah, some people never could. I still remember the first one I saw. It was this Enterprise from Next Generation. And I finally saw it. There's like a weird appliance store on my way home from school, but they also had Nagel posters all over sold art and they were appliances. It was South Dakota. It was weird.
What a renaissance that guy had. I know. Life. I'm tired of selling fridges. I'm a real big fan of Jasper Johns.
Yeah, exactly. Or he was just a real cokehead and he's like, ooh, I love this Nagel art. Yeah. But then he also had like smashed instruments, like musical instruments he'd sell.
Wow.
But yeah, I saw it there and I was like, I'll never forget the day I saw
right
that thing.
And also, and this is important for what we're about to say, like once you get good at it, it becomes quicker and quicker.
Yes.
Right. And that's how I think of the holographic principle is that you can see the three-dimensional object. And in our case, we might experience a three-dimensional world with three-dimensional objects, height, length, width, a cube, right? But if you were to step back, like that three-dimensional image is still contained within a flat space.
Yeah.
It's a two-dimensional image, but somehow you see it in 3D.
Right, that's from lighting. Lighting and perspectives
help will become important here in a bit. But yeah, so that's how I think of the holographic principle, is that we might experience a three-dimensional world, but if you can fathom a being a dimension above us looking at the poster, it's just a flat poster.
Oh, right.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, like it's just flat.
Yeah, because right? If you have four dimensions, what do three dimensions look like to you? It's like,
yeah, it looks like a sheet of paper.
Yeah.
So those godlike beings that would stand out there, they see a two-dimensional thing. We experience a three-dimensional thing.
Okay.
And that, in theory, and we'll talk about black holes. In theory, that goes on infinitely. So there's infinite dimensions to space. But that's how I think about it. The black hole, which is important here, has a surface to it. And the idea of the holographic principle is that surface, not the volume of the black hole, is what determines the existence, right? All information is confined by that surface.
So think of it like the skin of an apple.
Yes.
Right? So a black hole is the skin of this.
The event horizon, so to speak.
Okay.
And that event horizon is important, you know, because the event horizon is where light can't escape, essentially,
right?
Right? The gravity exceeds the speed of light or some equation that I don't understand. Which brings up the question, if we do live in a sort of hologram, is really that just a way of saying that we live in the inside of a black hole?
Oh, okay.
Which is a theory. Now, some theorists say that's impossible because nothing would survive
being
sucked into a black hole. We would just turn into spaghetti, like long strings of reality.
There's some really great animations online of like what would happen if you cross the event horizon. And it's basically your body gets bisected and bisected and bisected, smaller and smaller and smaller to like the atomic scale. But like I think you're like awake for a lot of it. So it's, and it like takes millennia because of the amount of gravity. So it actually takes a lot longer for you to basically die and get stretched to infinity. So it's like the worst place to really hang out. So don't do it.
Yeah. Well, and the reason why you wouldn't want to hang out there is because at least the way that science believes and really the math seems to work out is we would not, the universe we understand would not survive that
sure.
process of passing through the event horizon.
Yeah, yeah.
However, there's another theory, Schwarzschild cosmology, which posits that the one way we could live in a black hole is that if the black hole formed and the Big Bang was the first singularity of that, the end of the black hole.
Oh, interesting.
So we formed in a black hole.
But then we shot out. Well, I know one thing is that they've done studies. They think now that whatever data and universe stuff goes into a black hole gets shot out the other side.
Right.
So are we living in the black hole? Are we just out the other side,
yes,
in the back of it?
The universe, so the idea is that the Big Bang was the beginning of existence inside the black hole. Mm-hmm. And then each dimension is sort of like Russian nesting dolls.
Oh, okay.
So our universe exists within a bigger parent universe, within a bigger parent universe, and in infinitely.
Yeah.
So we are just, and so then, you know, again, come back to the idea of dimensionality. The singularity is the zero dimension.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right? The zero dimension, everything is a dot. Mm-hmm. Right? Everything is just no length, no width, just a dot. The first dimension, you get length.
Okay.
You get width, right? You know, you can have a line longer than one. If you were to draw a cube in the first dimension, it would just be a straight line.
Right.
Then you have the second dimension, which is a square. If you were to draw a cube in the second dimension, it's a square.
Yeah.
Zero dot, first dimension lines, second dimensions. And then you have the third dimension, which is our dimension that we experience, which is height, width, like you can actually hold a cube as we think of it. Then you go to the fourth dimension.
Ooh, this is where it gets interesting.
Yeah, it gets interesting. I mean, and geometrically, what you now have is not a cube, but a tesseract.
Yeah.
And the tesseract, which I think most of us know from science fiction, is a cube suspended within a cube with even more points. Mm-hmm. And that's how geometry imagines it. Quantum mechanics and physics imagine it as a cube that has other dimensions to it.
Oh.
Like, and what those dimensions are almost impossible to imagine in a 3D universe, right? Just as a square could never imagine what it would be like to be a cube.
Yeah, because we don't have the baseline understanding of what that would look like.
Yes. That doesn't mean that we cannot mathematically and scientifically see those dimensions or at least theorize and say, well, that anomaly in math might be caused by the fourth dimension.
Mm, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so, because we're just trying to guesstimate, but using the best tools we have, which is science, we're trying to posit what's happening out there.
Right.
And I mean, just seeing how it reacts back to us.
I mean, one place you see something like this is in like slit theory.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the quantum slit theory.
Yeah, the particle. So if you don't know, it's called the observer effect. You shoot a particle through a tiny, tiny microscopic hole, and that particle seems to react differently whether somebody's watching it or not.
Yes, yes.
And everybody's like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And they're like, it doesn't unless it's a hologram.
Oh, interesting.
Unless there's something in the fourth dimension, which we don't understand, that makes this work.
Interesting.
Right?
Okay.
So another great analogy that I think helps makes this make sense is imagine a flat table. And on the table, there's a square, a drawn square, two-dimensional square. Inside the square, there's a dot, button, right? Now, if you put an ant on that table and you were like, go push the button without crossing the square, the ant would never be able to do it.
No, he doesn't, and he's not even wearing sneakers. He can't jump.
No. It's a big line.
Yeah.
But you would see if you said, hey, don't cross the square, mm-hmm. but touch the button, the ant would just wander around the perimeter looking like.
Yeah, he doesn't even know what a square is, first of all. But yeah, he's just like, well, I don't even see how to get ant. In. Oh, smart ant. Okay.
I meant your mom's sister.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't mean like a.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah, yeah.
You just insulted women.
I did. Sorry about that.
No. I do mean an ant. I think ants are pretty smart.
Yeah, I think they are. Yeah, I think they're
pretty. I know when they find a piece of food, they get a line in there real quick.
They do.
I mean,
they put a call out.
So, yeah, but he would never fathom it. But if you walked up to the table and someone said, touch the button without crossing, you would just come in from above and be like, that's the problem.
Yeah.
But again, to a two-dimensional being, which an ant's not really a two-dimensional being, but in this analogy they are, they can never touch the button.
Right.
But you, a higher being who experiences dimensionality in a different way, is like, well, yeah, because you just come up from above.
Oh, aliens are just pushing our buttons.
Well, exactly. Intradimensional beings might just be like, that's not even like a problem in our world. Like you're, the only reason that you're feeling an anomaly is because you're bound by a three-dimensional world.
Okay.
You're that hidden object on a two-dimensional space experiencing life. And you think you're three-dimensional, or you're getting some time in your life. You're getting some other kind of forces, waves, and particle. And we still don't understand it.
Yeah.
It's a fish who says to his friend, where's the ocean at? And he's like, it's all around you. He's like,
You're
just embedded in it. You can't really perceive it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm on board.
Okay. Now, let's listen to another clip.
Folks, the possibility of more dimensions than the three that we experience, right? So we all know about left, right, back, forth, and up, down, right? Those are the three dimensions that are all around us. We all move through them freely in day-to-day life. These other dimensions suggested by theoretical considerations, there is no experimental evidence for any of what I'm about to tell you, but the theoretical considerations suggest that in addition to left, right, back, forth, and up, down, there may be other spatial dimensions. It's hard to picture, like, where could they be? There doesn't seem to be any room left, and that's really the point. They are new places that our experience doesn't allow us to access directly, but according to these theoretical ideas might be there. I love a little analogy that helps to understand this. Think of a garden hose is one that we love to use. So think about a garden hose that's nice and long. Now, from far away, the garden hose is going to look one-dimensional because that's the only part that you have the visual acuity to see, because the circular part is just too small for your feeble eyes to detect. But then if you take a pair of binoculars from a faraway vantage point, now you see that there is a circular dimension, a circular part that wraps around the garden hose that you missed when you just used your feeble senses. So dimensions can be big, obvious, and easy to see, or they can be curled up and tiny, much more difficult to detect. Now, the garden hose is an object in our universe, but this idea might apply to space itself, right? So it could be that left, right, back, forth, and up, down are the big, easy to see dimensions, like the horizontal extent of the garden hose. But just as the hose has a curled up dimension, maybe space itself has curled up dimensions. All around us, just curled up to such a fantastically small size that we can't see them with our eyes. We can't see them even with today's most powerful microscopes.
So there you have Brian Greene very eloquently explaining that.
Called us feeble.
Well, our sense is feeble. Right. The up, down, left, right that we all experience may just be looking at a garden hose from 100 miles away.
And that's kind of how we see things. Like everything's kind of on the macro scale, right? It's like that's why we've kind of got like relativity and those things figured out, regardless of the problems that may be involved with those. But when it starts to get small in the quantum world, like you said, those are rules that nothing in our world we think follows. Well, we think it doesn't follow, but there's starting to be studies that actually they're starting to be able to measure quantum changes, like spooky action at a distance with larger objects. So they're starting to understand how it affects, like eventually they'll understand how it affects us.
Correct.
Which would be great.
Well, in fact, what you're hinting at, which I love because that's where we were going to go, is that oftentimes when I listen to these things and I read about them, what strikes me is the theoretical aspect of this. And it's like, yeah, great. Am I really gonna get deep into this theoretical thing mm-hmm. when everybody always says, well, this is all theory and we don't really know how to think about this, but this is just our best guess. And I don't mind the theoretical like act. Mm-hmm. But then you're also like, well, what's the practical?
Right, yeah.
What are we going to do? What are the engineers going to be able to do?
Right, and that's what the whole thing about Oppenheimer was. If you've seen that, it's like, yeah, sure, theory is great. You got to actually do something.
Can you split an atom theoretically? Yes.
Yes.
Would it create a bomb theoretically? Yes. Well, then go do it.
Yeah, go do it. Blow up the world.
Destroy it. Yeah, bring the aliens to the world, which is pretty much maybe what happened.
I think that's what happened.
Maybe they were like, they've learned to split an atom. It's only a matter of time before. Because once you split an atom, just, you know, we weren't here to talk about Oppenheimer, but it makes a good analogy. Once you're able, once somebody says, you know, the atom isn't the smallest thing, mm-hmm. there's something smaller within it.
Right.
Right? I mean, I'm 49 years old. This will blow your mind. I'm 49, born in 1973. Graduated high school in 1991. We had a substitute at my high school who was one of those subs that, like, was kind of like just on the books. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, I think she just came in every day and she was going to sub at some point.
Right.
She was a retired teacher and her name was Sarge. She was a woman and, like, you'd be like, who's your sub? Sarge. And some people loved Sarge and some people. Sarge was by the book sub. Like, this is what the teacher said to do. If it took 8 minutes, she'd be like, well, then I guess class is over. Like, she's not. Like, so that was cool.
Yeah.
So Sarge was, we had her in physics class one time. And we asked her a question, right? We knew she didn't know the answer. We
right,
were just
yeah.
kind of like messing with
like,
the sub.
This dumb sub.
Sarge said, don't ask me nothing about physics. When I took physics, they hadn't split the atom.
Oh, wow.
So. Think about that in just sort of the time frame.
Right.
Right. Like, I'm in high school being substitute taught by a former teacher
that's
that didn't understand that the atom had been split.
Yeah, that's wild.
That's wild. That's how recent that discovery really is.
Yeah.
So we split the atom, and once we split the atom, then you realize, well, if you split the atom, then you can split it even further. Now we're down to quarks and like, well, maybe that's smaller.
Right.
Yeah. Every time we go smaller. Right. Now, the point being is that we think about interdimensionality as like, well, there's something beyond us that's bigger.
Oh, right.
Well, maybe there's stuff that's smaller and
right,
smaller.
Right, which would make sense. Yeah.
Right, which would, right? That we're not at the third level. We're at the third infinite level.
Right.
And
yeah,
there's infinity just
more levels.
Below. Right.
Yeah, we can't understand.
And that's what brought interdimensional beings into our universe. Mm. The splitting of the atom when they understood, oh, they found us.
Okay.
Like, they're not onto us, we're onto them.
Right, yeah.
Right, and vice versa. So now that that's the sort of framework for the UAP thing that we talked about at the top.
Right.
Again, all theory, what's the practical implications of this?
Right.
This week, which is remarkable, engineers at the University of Missouri published a paper in the Journal of Science Advances. And the team created a metamaterial using the fourth dimension.
Oh, no shit.
So I did see this.
Yeah, they're like, they have a material that's showing fourth dimensional properties.
Right.
Wow.
So I really apologize that I think it's I'm almost positive it's Dr. Huang. H-U-A-N-G,
okay.
Is that how you would say?
Oh, yeah. Huang. That sounds right.
Sounds right.
But we're also very white men. So.
Yeah, so like I don't want to put too much of an accent, but not.
I think it's when you put an accent on is when it gets bad. You can fuck up the name all you want, but just don't say it in what you perceive as their accent.
Don't say it. I'm not trying to.
No, I know. You're just trying to like.
Wrong.
It's like when you say like Ibiza
with an Asian name.
There's
sounds in other languages that we don't make.
Yes,
and that's exactly. What I just.
That makes sense. It gets tough sometimes.
I don't know why we got off on that tangent. But if Dr. Huang ever listens to this, I'll send it to him. What they did is they took math and light, which, again, they're just throwing those terms around like it's simple. Yeah, using math and light, we were able to harness the synthetic dimension. The synthetic dimension is the hypothetical fourth dimension.
Okay.
That we can't really access, but now engineers are taking theoretical quantum physics and mechanics and putting it into practice. Wow. And they literally built a metamaterial that can harness energy moving across its surface.
Wild.
Right? So, you know, we know that there's wave particles moving and there's energy moving. Mm-hmm. Think about it like an earthquake. When an earthquake rattles the earth, mm-hmm. 90% of the energy moves across the surface of the earth laterally as an energy wave. It's not the shaking of the ground that really destroys buildings. It's that surface wave that just sort of, they're now able to harness that energy as it moves across this metamaterial and direct it where they want it to go.
Well, that's going to lead to free energy for all.
Well, it's probably going to lead to a bomb.
Yeah, probably.
Not by the University of Missouri.
Right.
I mean, it's probably going to be, it probably has potential to be the most catastrophic weapon that we've ever discovered, would be my guess.
Hell yeah, America, we did it again.
Could you imagine where you're like, we will literally level your entire city with an energy wave that will knock down every building.
So and no radiation.
People will be like, no, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And then.
What's that guy that came out recently that worked at the Antarctic base? And he claims that that's just a giant energy weapon and that they caused an earthquake in Turkey with this shit. Do you see this? This shit's wild. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I mean
he's like, we have the ability to do this stuff.
Look, if you're listening for the first time, we used to be a conspiracy podcast. Mm-hmm. And this is where I go back to my conspiracy. maybe you're onto something there, Shane.
Yeah.
But we're trying mm-hmm. to continue to explore weird science because that's what we've been doing for the last couple of years. Let's stick with topology, which is this weird brand of mathematics that studies shapes and the arrangement in space, mm-hmm. which is what these mechanical engineers were able to leverage to create what is called a topological pumping.
Oh, hell yeah.
Which allows waves to navigate a sample undisturbed by disorders and defects. And that's from their paper that was just published.
Wait, read that one more time.
Allows waves to navigate a sample, which in other words is an object, a material, undisturbed by disorders and defects.
Huh.
So they're able to, so this wave of energy normally would just sort of get absorbed and, you know, you wouldn't experience it. They're able to sort of control it free of disorder and defects and therefore capture the energy, so to speak. Fourth dimensional energy.
Wild. I don't understand any of that, but that's crazy. I got to look at this study.
It's not understandable in a third dimensional perspective. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to resort to an analogy to understand it.
Okay.
Again, it's if you're living in a cube and somehow you can see the tesseract, or if you're a square that can somehow glimpse the cube, mm-hmm. and you might say, well, between me and the tesseract, or the square and the cube, there's energy there.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe we can grab that energy and do something with it.
Okay. Does that tie in with all the energy that's in the universe that basically is in all the negative space that we see? It's like all the energy just housed in the universe.
There's way more non-particles than particles.
Right. Yeah. We just have to figure out the best way to detect them.
That's right. I mean, if you look out in space, you see a lot of stars. You don't notice that there's infinitely more nothingness.
Right. And actually, that applies to everything.
Everything.
We're mostly nothing.
We're mostly nothing.
Yeah,
and this is just sort of playing around in that nothingness of space.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. And you're thinking, well, I don't mean nothingness like out. I'm talking inside of you, on top of the surface.
Yeah,
this,
nothing's actually like solid.
Yeah. Yeah. The solidness, again, that solid perception is because of where you exist in the holographic image.
Okay.
So you see this as solid. The person above you, they don't see you. They may not even see a difference between you and the book that's the microphone in front of you.
Wild.
It might just all look like a river flowing.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Right? Hmm. Like you remember The Matrix, the movie, and when you would pull back and you would see the screen of falling numbers.
Yeah.
And at one point, if you've never seen The Matrix,
catch up.
The Betrayer, I think his name is Cypher. He says, yeah, if you look at it long enough, I just see blonde, redhead, brunette.
Yeah.
But you can see that, like, it's just this, you know, very complicated algorithm. Mm. People in the Matrix see it as life.
Yeah.
And then eventually the savior of the Matrix, Neo, he's able to see both.
Right.
He sees the world as it's truly structured. And that's sort of this idea of where you are in that two-dimensional painting. Are you seeing it from standing in the mall? Are you seeing the third three-dimensional object within? Or are you living in that three-dimensional object?
Wow. And that's tough for a lot of people because they assume that life only exists in our plane. You know, it's like, how could anything living be that small?
Right, how or that large?
How would that even work?
That's correct.
Which is a real, and I think they talked about this, like, ontological shock. It's like, changes your whole world perspective on where you exist. And it's hard enough for people to say, oh, I exist on the same plane with some creature I don't recognize or understand. But what if you're existing on multiple planes with multiple creatures and beings you don't understand? It just, instead of being a very linear thing, it's now, oh, it's everywhere at all times.
Right.
And I think that's which is what they've said. You know, they said, whatever's out there is here all the time. And it's sitting right next to us. Probably a podcast with a bunch of fourth dimensional beings on the same table.
Or sitting inside of you. Like
that's what that feeling was. I was like, no wonder I had to get a colonoscopy.
Well, I mean, it is important to understand that it is something. It's not something happening elsewhere,
right?
It's something happening everywhere,
mm-hmm.
and you are happening within it,
right?
It's the fish in the ocean. Where's the ocean? Look around you. I don't see it. It's right around you.
You're just dumb. You got it. What did he say? What did he call us? We had a. What kind limited of brains? What did Brian Greene say?
He didn't say it. We're idiots.
It really hurt my feelings, Brian Greene, if you're listening.
Well, okay. So now I want to just make sure we understand where we are. I think we've done a pretty good job understanding the holographic principle.
Mm-hmm.
Then we say, based on these ideas, this like in the last week, these engineers were able to harness some fourth dimensional power on a surface of a object here in our space.
Yeah.
And that sounds like, well, that's really cool. What could happen with it? Well, just this year, March 27th, a physicist and science officer at Raja Ramana Center for Advanced Technology in India. Mm-hmm. I'm going to really do bad on this name.
Oh, my wife's Indian. I can probably do this.
What do you got? This
Which is, one is it?
Mr.
Mr. Steve Smith. Weird. Mr. Woe, I would say. You don't even try to do the first name.
Yeah, the first name.
Mr. Woe, W-A-U-G-H.
He has proposed a theory that time is not the fourth dimension.
Oh.
Now, the idea that time is the fourth dimension, of course, is an Einsteinian principle. Einstein really rejected some of he didn't reject. He built upon the theories of Isaac Newton.
Mm-hmm.
And time was sort of this fourth dimension, and he had lots of things to do with time. But this new theory, shockingly simple, is based upon the concept of time duration, and it basically goes like this. Distance is velocity times time.
Sure.
So how far you go is based upon how fast you're going and how long you do it. Well, we all know how to do math, right?
Some of us.
So you can switch the equation and define time is distance divided by velocity.
Okay. So what does that mean for us lay people?
Well, I wanted to make sure you understand what that means. We can if distance, right? It's like if you say to somebody, I ran at 10 miles an hour for 1 hour, they would say you went 10 miles.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Well, then we can define time as the other thing, right?
Okay.
Time, you want to figure out what time is. If you say, I ran 10 miles at 10 miles an hour, how long did I run? 1 hour.
Okay.
So time is a principle of distance and velocity.
Oh, and I guess that kind of ties in with what I was saying earlier with black holes. Like the slower you're moving due to gravity changes your time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So time cannot be separated from motion. Without motion, concept of time will cease to exist. Mm-hmm. So what does this mean? Is that what if that motion across the surface of this metamaterial created by engineers is, it's that motion, that movement, which is distance and velocity, mm-hmm. equals time.
Okay.
In other words, what was actually probably discovered inadvertently in engineering is they would not explain it this way, is they discovered time travel.
Holy shit.
Because we think about time as this fourth dimension. It's not. Mm-hmm. The next dimension is just, it's moving at a speed and at a distance that's different than ours. Mm-hmm. We experience that as time.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, again, if you pull back and look at it, a higher being would say, that's nothing to do with time.
Right.
It literally is just that we're seeing it from a perspective that you're, okay, here's my favorite analogy.
All right, let's hear it.
Right? Is you're on a train going from Los Angeles to New York.
Okay. Bar car?
No, well, it doesn't matter.
Oh, okay.
It's you.
I got the wrong priority.
Another person. Mm-hmm. It's a glass train.
Okay.
So it's visible, right, from the outside. Mm-hmm. And inside the car is a ping pong table. Mm. You're standing on the New York side of the train.
Yes.
Your friend is on the Los Angeles side of the train. And you hit the ping pong ball to your friend. Mm-hmm. Now, your friend, he sees the ball coming at him.
Very fast, probably.
Let's say you hit it slow.
Oh, okay.
He sees the ball coming to him. Mm-hmm. In his perception, it's across the table, or if he wanted to be, it's from east to west.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, right? So, like, mm-hmm. that's his perception of the ball. If somebody standing on the street waiting for the train at a junction came by at that precise moment, mm-hmm. they would not see the ball going from east to west.
Right.
Because the train is going the west other direction.
East, yeah.
It's going west to east. So in their perception, they never see the ball go that direction.
Right.
Right? Because it's like, well, no, it's not going that direction because
right.
Like I see that it's going much faster the other direction, mm-hmm. right? They would see it go east and a little slower east.
Yes.
It would vary like a wave, but it would not be ever going that direction.
Right.
Okay. But if you were to take someone and go out in outer space and watch the exact same moment where the ping pong ball is hit, mm-hmm. person standing at the intersection, they don't see the car going east at all because the earth is rotating the other direction.
Oh, yeah.
So everything is moving in that space.
Wait, right? Earth doesn't rotate east?
No, I think it rotates the other way.
Oh, crazy.
Right?
Does it?
That's why the times go that direction.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it right? shows what I know.
So the earth is going, you know, the other direction. Mm-hmm. But of course, again, another perspective. Well, yeah, but the earth goes the other direction around the sun.
Right.
So really, it's never like...
And actually, Earth's spiraling. It's not a straight circle. It's right, a spiral right. through space.
So we're again, all, yeah. every time you pull back further mm-hmm. from the garden hose or the Earth
right,
or
yeah.
the ping pong ball, it's like, oh, well, yeah, well, now that makes sense. Like, you only experience life in the dimension that you were in. Everything below or above, you're theoretically experiencing. And perhaps, as mechanical engineers have discovered in Missouri, of all places.
Yeah, which is wild.
Yeah. The practical implication of that is what every time that we go into the quantum realm or just outside of it into the dimension above us, below and above us, we are potentially, I think, we are when we capture this sort of surface energy, what we're really capturing is the ability to manipulate time.
Sure.
And that is ultimately what I think is going on. Now,
is it the ability to manipulate time or is it the ability to operate outside of time?
It's the ability to see the three-dimensional object at the kiosk.
Okay.
Right? Remember people that couldn't do it? Mm-hmm. You'd have people standing there for 30 minutes, like, I don't see, I can't.
Yeah, well, you're like, fucking numbskulls.
Someone would walk up and be like, ah, it's a teapot. And
yeah.
Like, fuck!
You ever just lie to them? You're like, oh my God, oh, it's yeah, Washington yeah, it's Crossing to Delaware. Yeah, it's a dildo. Look at the detail in that thing, the veins.
Yeah. But it's that ability. And once you do that ability, perhaps you're able to harness some of that. When I say energy, you might call it information.
Sure, data.
And it might be, you know, part of what we might be experiencing in terms of unidentified aerial phenomena, which many people have already mm-hmm. theorized, is that we're not discovering something. Nothing's arriving. Mm. It's always been here.
We're just seeing.
We're just starting to comprehend what is a bigger picture.
Sure. Which makes sense. I mean, they say that the reason we started seeing more with our pilots and whatever is when we started introducing infrared cameras. It's like, oh, because it's operating in a spectrum we typically can't see. There are times when it is available in our spectrum.
Right.
But it's just we're discovering the tools and new ways to see these things.
Sure.
So they've always existed.
Yes, they've always existed, at least existed, pre-existed, what we think of as humans.
Right. Yeah.
We're just sort of now starting to be able to perceive these things.
Wow.
And you know, to bring it back to like actual science, what is groundbreaking is that we now have a material which in some way harnesses some of the energy from the fourth dimension.
Wow.
In the same way that we harnessed energy from the splitting of the atom, mm-hmm. right? And then we found that that has tremendous energy. Now we've moved to a level above us, and that's very, very interesting.
It is. Yeah, I mean, one of the things they've said is if you, like, the energy that's around us at all times, if we knew how to harness it, like the amount that you could fit in a thimble would destroy the earth. It's just like dumb facts like that. And you're like, there's that much energy surrounding us at all times.
That's,
if
right.
it was used which, for which, bad, ooh, watch yeah. out.
We are the ants walking around the square trying to push the button mm-hmm. when a creature a little above us would say, well, you just reach in from above.
Yeah, you just go down from the top. You
and
dumb
it's like,
idiot.
why are y'all using, you know, fossil fuels and these and solar energy? Like there's energy everywhere. You just
right,
need to
yeah.
know how to harness it.
Sure. Yeah.
And so all of that is just a way of bringing back to, like, you know, David Grush talks about this holographic principle in sworn testimony to Congress. Now, of course, he's maybe giving an opinion there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always, it's
but
tough.
It's still under oath. So he's, right. he's telling the truth of what he understands.
Can you be charged for having an opinion?
Well, I think Donald Trump is
about to find out. Right?
What
yeah.
I mean,
I think so. Yeah. yeah. So yeah, under oath is important.
In any case, you know, we have this idea that we live in on a holographic projection, and that there are dimensions, both nesting dolls that are smaller than us mm-hmm. infinitely, and there are nesting dolls that are larger than us infinitely. Okay. And I think we are just now, in my lifetime, harnessing energy from both. We're trying to understand where we fit into this universe. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very interesting to me.
It is, yeah. It's
weird. Explains a lot.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it is. We've talked about this before, but it's we're basically at the time when they had horses and cars at lots. It's like we're kind of in that in between.
We're in
time
that in between
like,
time.
We're straddling two worlds. One is stuck in the past, and one is so far outside of our realm of understanding.
Yeah,
it's like the first people that saw a car probably lost their fucking mind. They're like, "What, horseless carriage?"
Yeah.
Like they're still applying their beliefs to it. They're like, "Where are the horses?"
Right. I think another good analogy in that way is like we are the generation that had a home phone and a cell phone,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Like I'm still blown away when I fill out a form and they ask for my home phone number.
That's insane.
And I'm like, who's had a home? I haven't had a home phone number in 25 years.
Me neither. Yeah.
Like as soon as a cell phone came out. I was like, why would I want to use, what do you want me to fucking get a telegraph?
Yeah,
like,
it's insane. And all home phones do is, it's just spam calls constantly.
Yeah, no, it's the dumbest thing ever, but they still ask for it. And like, but we lived in that time mm-hmm. where you're like, this technology is new. It doesn't work all the time. I need a, like you just have a, you have a phone at your house, right? Everyone did that. And now nobody has a phone at their house unless you're there.
Well, some people are locked into some great deals with their
are they really?
Service providers. Yeah. Dude, my brother and sister-in-law, they're like, they have a home phone. They got all this. I'm like, get rid of that shit. What are you doing? They're like, well, every time we call, they're like, it's, we'll lower the price if you keep your phone in your house. I'd be like, fuck off.
What is the government loophole AT&T is doing?
It doesn't make any sense.
Every time they're like, yeah, we can bundle your home phone. And I'm like, wait, I'm like, stop right there.
Yeah.
If you're bundling anything involving a home phone, I'm done with this conversation.
Yeah, eventually they're going to be like, you know, you can get a cell phone, internet for your house, and a kick in the balls for a lower rate. It's like, well, why do I want the kick in the balls? It's like, well, we got a quota. I don't know.
It would be the equivalent, this is a callback. It's always good to say when you're doing a callback. If you went to go buy a car, and, you know, let's say it's $20,000, you're like, would you do $17,500? Mm-hmm. And the guy's like, here's what I'll do. I'll do $20,000, mm-hmm. but I'll kick in a horse. You'd be like, What the fuck am I going to do with a horse?
Yeah, this is the Mr. Beast complex. It's like, I just made your life better. It's like, yeah, but the tax implications are brutal.
What, I got to get a pasture? Like, I'm not digging a home phone. What the fuck are you trying to give me?
And honestly, the worst thing about that is you got to put a post outside of your house. You got to dig a hole, get either concrete or the foam that fills it up, and then you just strap your horse to that.
Yeah.
Like, who's got a post out front?
I would do it. I would just let that horse just go.
Just wither.
I am all for feral animals. I want
wild horse.
I want wild horses. I want wild dogs. I think wild
dogs. Oh, yeah. Yeah, those are always good packs of wild dogs.
This is the weird part of the Weird Science Podcast. Yeah. I don't know how I'm going to understand it, but it's been fun. I think that I am drawn to this topic because, one, people like Brian Greene from Columbia University, they just always sound really good when they talk about this.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. They don't put the dumb idiots on TV. They get the smart scientists.
Right. I mean, I prefer him even to like a Neil deGrasse Tyson, who is also very smart, I think, in his own right.
Yeah. But I think also in the circles we run, people are like, why is he so weird about shit? Just fucking.
Yeah. Like he.
He's a naysayer.
I think he's like a Joe Rogan for a certain.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Like, he takes sort of complex ideas and tries to make them understand, which I really appreciate. It's kind of what we do on this podcast.
Yeah, he's
very good at it. Mm-hmm. I like the guys that just make no sense.
Sure. Yeah.
Where they're like, this analogy will help. Imagine that you're a speck of dust inside a feather that's flying on a bird under the ocean. Like, what?
Yeah, those are the people that are like... They definitely have, they're Rain Man type people, and they don't know how to make an analogy that makes sense to us, but I appreciate it because they're so passionate. And they understand their world. It's like us trying to understand fourth dimension stuff.
And
I love that. Because,
and I like those guys. Look, I'm not that guy. Also, that guy couldn't stand in front of a room of 150 people and make them laugh, and I can do that.
There you go.
I mean, I'm a clown.
Sometimes more people.
I'm a clown.
We're both very clowny.
Yeah, I'm a silly. Someone last night did a show. We did a show together last night.
We did, yeah.
And after the show, someone said, I like it when you're silly.
Oh, was it your wife?
No. It was an audience member who likes my comedy enough to say, I like it when you're silly.
Nice. Yeah, silly's good.
And I was like, I was kind of being silly last night. I was tired. It was late.
Yeah. Silly is always better because it's like everyone gets silly. I think one of my problems is like I'm often... I got to do my comedy by the book. But then the times when I'm just dumb and silly and fucking having a good time, I was like, that was amazing. And I'm like, yeah, because I was myself. I was just being stupid. Well, and silly is where it's at.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that Dr. Schwarzschild couldn't pull that off, silliness. But I appreciate that there are people in this world mm-hmm. who are not silly people.
Yes.
And that's what I think this pod should be about, is there's a connection between science and comedy that is unique and engaging to me.
I agree. Right? I agree. Well, I think that comedians often, we've said this before, but it's like we talked about the Matrix, but it's like kind of we see the code because we're such observant people. We're constantly breaking down interactions and relationships and stuff. And it's like that, in a sense, is very scientific. And the way you build a joke is like it's a peer-reviewed thing. Like you... try a joke. It didn't work.
Comedy is peer reviewed. That's a really great point.
You're constantly evolving and adjusting your data, or like your not equations, but your, what's it called? What do you do as your scientist? Experiments. There we go. Oh. This is why I'm not a scientist. But you're constantly like tweaking your experiments and figuring out the right way to do things.
I wonder, and if there's any scientist out there that hear this, send us an email and tell us. I'm very curious about this. In comedy, it's very peer-reviewed. So most of your new material is performed in front of an audience that's predominantly comics.
Yes.
If you get comics laughing, you know, one, you're onto something. You know, two, that it's going to have to be adjusted for a broader audience.
Yes, right? Yes.
Because if it makes comics laugh, it will not generally make the audience laugh, but you're onto something.
Yes.
There is this phenomena when you debut a joke, something new, and the audience loves it, and comics don't. And our reaction is, screw that joke. That joke sucks. I can't believe that joke works.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering
yeah.
if there's something in the scientific community that's the same. Like, not where you put out a paper and the whole scientific community is like, yeah, that's great. But if you put something out and the people are like, oh, I love this.
Yeah, yeah.
And scientists are like, man, fuck that theory.
Well, that's Avi Loeb.
Oh, it is Avi Loeb.
That's totally Avi Loeb. Yeah. It's like Harvard scientist. An expedition. Was it the Galileo expedition? Right. He's looking for, people online have been like, in 28 days, we're going to find out if what he found was a spacecraft or if it's just random stuff.
He is, by the way, if you don't know Avi Loeb, he is the Harvard scientist who proposed that the cigar-shaped object that hurled through our universe a few years ago was actually a UFO.
Yes.
Which
it didn't act like anything else out there. So it kind of took a left turn. It did some weird shit.
In his defense, because I know he did, look, Shane's right. He told a joke that the media picked up on and ran with, and everybody and scientists were like, that's outlandish and wild. In his defense, my perspective was, he said, here's what we know this thing did. Here's what we know it's not. Why isn't the idea that it's an unidentified flying object, a spaceship, why isn't that a
Right, because it should be it should be reasonable to ask these questions.
The logical conclusion is, if it's not this and not this, then it has to be that.
Yeah.
That was his point. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? From a layman's perspective, and I think science said, look, that's a huge leap in terms of what we understand about the universe. You have to incrementally make those leaps.
Right, right.
Like, you don't say something like that, right?
Yeah, you can't go from a horse to a hovercraft. You got to have the car in there first.
Right.
Or else people are going to be like, there's no way you can do this. That's crazy.
If you are a zoologist and you have a Bigfoot encounter, you're like 100%. I saw a animal that was a bipedal hominone that, you know, I don't know if I pronounced it right.
Hominid. There you go.
If you see that and you're like, I saw a Bigfoot, you don't publish a paper.
No.
You'll lose your job.
Yeah, you got to tell people you saw small feet first.
Yeah, you got to work up to it. You got to go in there and you got to find some evidence. I know it was here. Here's some photographs of its footprint. It needs to be. You got to take steps.
Yes. Yeah. Because you got to really need breadcrumbs for the public, because they have such a hard time. Even though with religion, they're like, three beings live together in the sky is one thing. That's like, oh, that makes sense. But then you're like, check out this fucking drone that will take you to work. And like, what is this?
Yeah, right. No.
Yeah. No.
Yeah,
breadcrumbs. Got to lead it up.
Yeah, you got to drizzle them along. Final thoughts on this. One, is it final thoughts if I do two?
You say two final thoughts.
No, I'm gonna pull it down to one.
Okay.
We're a scientific podcast now. I'm not gonna fudge math.
Yeah. Don't do that.
I think that in the future, probably after I'm gone, but maybe in my lifetime, but almost assuredly in my children's lifetime. So that's another, let's say, 80, 90 years. We will look back at 2020 as the massive shift in how we understand the universe.
Yeah, I agree.
In a way that we look back at, like, the world was flat.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So in the future, we're going to get to a place and people will be still like flat earthers in the future, but they'll be like that towards quantum mechanics. Yes. Yeah.
You'll be like, you literally are so you are 5 to 1,000 years out of reality.
Yeah. Like some guy's going to build his own tesseract and try to fly into the next dimension and crash and burn.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I hadn't thought of this, but it might make sense that one of the things that the UAP congressional hearings have sort of boiled to the surface is that the Vatican, the Catholic Church, which, whatever you think of them, they're one of the most powerful and oldest organizations in the world. People think, well, the Vatican's had this information for 1,000+ years, mm-hmm. and they've just kept it down. So why do people still believe in, say, a trinity of gods in the sky that are one? Well, maybe because like there's been a very powerful organization trying to maintain mm-hmm. a flat earth view of reality, because this is seismic shift in theology when this happens.
Yes.
When we understand that you know, there are gods upon gods upon, you know, and or maybe there's one god or no god, or there's nothing and there's everything all at once.
Sure.
It's so revolutionary that it would make sense. The only way to sort of keep the truth out was, and look, the Catholic Church has been brilliant at suppressing truth.
Yeah, they've done a great job.
Yeah. I mean, they Sinead kept O'Connor the flat earth proof. Until it, and they shifted it. So,
yeah.
You know, I think that in the coming decades that we're going to see a seismic shift in how we perceive reality in the universe, not just in a theoretical level, but in a practical way.
Yes, yeah.
It's not enough to say the earth isn't flat. You have to sail around the world.
Yeah.
Right? I don't mean Columbus, because he didn't. I don't mean we branch out and then enslave other people.
No, don't colonize.
We actually like circumnavigate and be like, oh, yes, the world is round.
Yeah.
Yes, we do live in a nesting doll of realities, and there's a reality above us and below us that we can sort of connect with, or the entire thing.
Yeah.
Can we bring energy in from those things? Can it change? Do those things. It means that life as we know it is going to change radically.
Yeah. And what's interesting, I've always, every time something like this happens, whether it's the Industrial Revolution or whatever happens in history, that's so mind-blowing to people. It really is just one generation. You just have to be a parent and have a kid as it's happening, and then it's just normal for those kids. I think it's really interesting that it's so easy to adopt new things as a human species, because like, here's an example for comedy. It's like when 9/11 jokes came out, I was like, god damn, don't you guys know that was just not that long ago? And they're like, I grew up in a reality where it was before I was born. So it's like, it's their
Vietnam,
right? Yeah. So it's I think generations easily adopt and they never question. It's like, we never questioned factories.
Sure.
You know? And it's so, that's what's interesting to me, is that like, we'll so easily adopt it. It's like your kids, or maybe even their kids, will be like, yeah, it's so crazy, I'm hanging out with my fifth dimensional buddy, whatever, you know? And it's just going to be normal to them, which I think is great, because we're such an adaptive species, or we just have such short memories. But I think that's really cool. And I'm excited to see what's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, it, like my perspective on it, you know, is that it might be catastrophic or troubling or difficult, depending on where you are in the perspective. Meaning, if you're in that ping pong match inside the train car and the ball goes from east to west and you lose a point, you might be like, ah.
Yeah.
But the person standing outside doesn't see the point, doesn't even really care about the game.
It's they're like, what's the point?
And the person above that barely sees the train.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so like it's all that perspective of the kiosk. And, you know, I get it. You know, my mother-in-law, if it happens in her lifetime, she is going to be like, the earth's flat.
Crazy.
100%.
Yeah.
Last time I brought up aliens with her, she really was like, well, did God create aliens?
Oh, yeah.
And it was difficult at an emotional level for her, and I care about her. So I wasn't going to be like, you know, you need to figure this out.
Right, yeah.
You're just going to be like, ah, let Pop go to this grave thinking that.
Yeah.
You know.
Because it's easier. It is easier.
So.
Yeah, your point on perspective, you know, you pull back and it changes your perspective. The further and further you get back, it's like you didn't see the point. You don't get the point. Mm-hmm. You don't understand the game. You don't understand this. And then you get to a point where you're like, we're just all hanging out. We're all together. I think that's the same feeling that astronauts get when they go up to space the first time and they see the planet as one thing.
Right. Yeah.
It's like we as humans are very lucky to even have that perspective, you know, and be able to look down and say, oh, we are just one planet. We all need to get along. Whereas you go a dimension up, and everyone's like, why are they squabbling about this shit? Just, it's all about love and light. It's all about this. And it's just the further you go back, the more it becomes just one common understanding and understanding of the universe and as a whole,
or the solar system.
Sure.
Or someone's like, you're worried about global warming. Your solar system is becoming, you know,
God, the politics around that. It's like, no, they're like,
your star is weakening. Forget about global warming.
Yeah, like, man, all that space debris is causing black holes. Man, there's a lot more culpability than we thought.
Well. This has been really fun.
Yeah, I've had a good time on this. This is very interesting,
and I'm glad that we're here in this space talking about this kind of stuff.
Absolutely, I'm stoked that we're doing this, and thank you for those sticking with us. I know it's been kind of an awkward transition, but as we go, it'll get smoother, and we'll be back in the saddle normally.
And we'll have guests on. We have a lot of people.
Yes.
Lined up to be guests, so we're excited to have a guest back. So,
absolutely.
On that note, I think this has been the Weird Science Podcast. I'm Justin.
I'm Shane.
Peace.